This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Imagine a state law that could reduce North Carolina's prison population, cut the recidivism rate, and save $50 million a year. Well, imagine no more. The Justice Reinvestment Act has, in fact, been on the books for 3 years. It made changes in probation laws, and it passed with rare bipartisan support. Since 2011, the prison population has actually declined, the recidivism rate has dropped, and costs are down. But while it toughens regulations for some offenders, it eases them for others. Eric Eckholm is a legal correspondent for The New York Times and recently wrote an article examining the effects of the state's new probation system, and he joins me now. Eric Eckholm, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let's talk about this law. Talk about the Justice Reinvestment Act. How did it change probation laws?
Well, I think officials in North Carolina were kind of startled to discover that more than half of all new prison admissions were not people committing new crimes, but those who were out on probation, maybe with a suspended sentence, and were getting their probation revoked and getting sent to prison, often because of rather minor so-called technical violations, missing a series of appointments, maybe flunking a drug test. But people would end up spending 6 months, a year, 2 years in prison for violating probation.
So they hadn't committed, again, as you say, a serious crime, but they'd violated probation. That sends them back to jail. Jails are filling up. And as you say, more than half of the people who were in jail were there for probation violations.
More than half of the new admissions.
Of the new admissions.
Right.
So they decide to tackle this. And what do they do?
Well, they've adopted a technique that's sort of colloquially known as the quick dip, which is giving the probation officers the ability to tell an offender, you are going to go to jail for 2 or 3 days right now. You have violated your probation, and we're going to send you a message. So it's like a jolt of reality, and this seems to sort of shock many people into taking the system seriously and avoiding further offenses. And so these are not the most violent criminals out there. These are people who probably can stay in the community with the appropriate monitoring and nudging and still protect public safety. And so there's been a huge drop in new prison admissions because of probation revocations.
Now that's kind of interesting because ordinarily, let's say you had missed one or two appointments with your probation officer. That could have sent you back to jail to prison for 6 months and maybe 2 years, depending on the original crime that you'd committed for this violation. Now you're saying they go right to jail for 3 days, and that has had the effect of reducing the recidivism rate, that quick dip, as it's called, is enough to send that message and keep that particular violator from doing anything more serious.
Right. We'll have to see, over many years how it works out in terms of new crimes committed by people who get this treatment. But so far, it's really helped the state. What had been a growing need for more prisons that the state couldn't afford, they've actually been able to close a number of facilities and to save money each year.
All right. And tell us how much it has saved the state. We talked about the $50 million, but give us an idea about the drop in recidivism rate.
I don't know figures on drop in recidivism rate. It depends how you calculate that. But there was a steep drop in new admissions to the prison, something like 21% in 3 years. And that was largely because of this probation change.
And even the $50 million, which depending on how much you make a year, may sound like a lot of money or maybe not. But the fact is this $50 million decline and this decline in new admissions comes at a time when we had been expecting an increase in both, right?
That's right. Over 10 years, the corrections budget for adult corrections had increased by half, and it was more than $1.3 billion. And in the last 3 years, there have been some new expenses for health and medical things and other things, but by being able to close down a number of prisons and reduce the staff, the net budget is $50 million or less than what it had been 3 years ago, and considerably less than what it would have been if the imprisonment rate had kept rising as it was. The other interesting thing is that in North Carolina, as in much of the country, the number of people in prison was rising even through an era of declining crime rates. So it clearly was not a function of more crime, more people need to be in prison. It was a function of policy decisions, you know, who gets sent to prison for how long and how easily do you revoke probation and parole.
That's an interesting political problem. This is a conservative legislature and was in 2011 when it, or conservative-leaning legislature in 2011. So you've got this interesting problem. While conservatives generally don't like to increase public spending, they also don't like to be seen as soft on crime. This presented, it seems to me, an interesting challenge to the legislature.
Yes, it was an interesting challenge. I think there have been a number of very conservative states, including states like Texas, that have adopted similar measures. In part, these tend to be focused on the lower-level, nonviolent or nonviolent, low-level felony offenders, and the savings, the money savings, are so great. And as long as this can be done without any evidence that you're endangering the public, then it seems to enjoy bipartisan support. But to make a bigger dent in the prison population, most experts say will take measures that will be much more politically contentious.
Well, I want to get to those in a moment, but I want to get to another aspect of this, because while it is somewhat softer on those who would have gone away for a long time and instead only go for 3 days, there are those others who have actually had probation added to their sentences because their full term was up. And ordinarily, once you serve your full sentence, and that would be under the so-called truth in sentencing laws, you're out from under court supervision. But this law added supervision, which has been a part of the effect and also part of the criticism.
That's right. And another reason why they were able to get Republican support, they didn't reduce anyone's prison sentences. But for those more serious felons who do serve prison time, one kind of unexpected effect of some of the tougher laws of the 90s was that people weren't going out on parole. They serve out virtually their whole sentence. And so a majority of people coming out of prison after long terms had no supervision at all, no parole, no probation. And it wasn't politically possible to shorten sentences and say, and we're going to add a year or two of parole. So instead, for some serious felonies, the legislature actually made the official sentence 9 months to a year longer than it had been, with the stipulation that extra time would be used for parole. And so people are getting out now, and they have to see a parole officer. And the ideal here is that you provide services if they need drug treatment, if they need help finding housing, that you provide a lot of social aid, as well as monitoring these people for their first year or two out of prison. And that could help bring down recidivism. Of course, the state has to follow through with those services and treatment to make that really work well.
We're talking about the Justice Reinvestment Act today on The State of Things. Eric Eckholm is my guest, a legal correspondent with The New York Times, who has written about it. And so that does mean some additional spending, some public spending, to meet those demands, the demands for the extra supervision, right?
That's right. Well, the promise, and this phrase, justice reinvestment, which has been used around the country and promoted by the Council on State Governments, which is a nonpartisan group promoting these ideas. The idea is that you save a lot of money in fewer people in prison, building fewer prisons, and you use a good share of that money to improve the system for fighting recidivism, for treating offenders. And the original promise was even that some of that money would go back into really poor impacted communities with very high incarceration rates to try to break this whole cycle. Unfortunately, that last part hasn't happened so often.
And that is one of the critiques of progressive groups about this law, the fact that the money isn't going back into the neighborhoods where we're seeing high crime to address root problems. The other is, in fact, tacking on extra supervision. So rather than shorten the sentence, we're actually tacking on more court supervision. And that's also been a source of criticism, has it not?
That's been a source of criticism, although it's not a huge factor. The really big point that many criminologists are making is that measures so far taken in North Carolina and a number of other states under this label of justice reinvestment have been good as far as they go, but they have a very limited scope. I mean, There was a lot of praise for Texas for bringing down their imprisonment rates, you know, by several percent over a period of years using very similar methods. But last year we saw actually a rise in the number of prisoners in Texas, and the national, what had been a three-year decline in the number of prisoners in state prisons was actually reversed in 2013. And what people are saying is that, you know, you pick the low-hanging fruit. The probation revocation reform is a great thing. It's useful. But as long as we have mandatory sentencing, three strikes laws that tie the hands of courts and give them, you know, almost no ability to alter sentences for people that do seem, that have special circumstances leading to their crimes or who do seem to be rehabilitated, as long as people are getting these 20 and 30-year sentences or life, so many, there's actually been an increase in the number of people with life sentences around the country. And it's very hard to make a significant dent in the prison population without looking at sentencing.
And the logic of the Justice Reinvestment Act, which is we are going to take a finer, more subjective look at each individual rather than say, you know, here's the rule for everybody, that logic then applies to mandatory sentencing and three strikes, you're out.
Yes, but that's where you get into the real political difficulties, because that sort of tough-on-crime approach has been very popular over the last quarter century, and it may have helped to bring down crime rates, but many experts who've studied this say that the rate of incarceration is so high that it's beyond any real benefit in terms of fighting crime, protecting the public.
All right.
Protecting the public.
Eric, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Eric Eckholm is a legal correspondent for the New York Times. Just ahead, a new play that poses questions about love, race, and sexuality. You'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.